Hey Podnuts, Corey here from Instant House Call. Whether you're a break fix tech who needs to provide remote support on demand without pre-installed software, or a managed service provider who wants to connect to unattended PCs anytime, Instant House Call makes remote support easy. I want to invite you to try Instant House Call free for yourself. Go to podnuts.com and click on the link in the show notes, then use the promo code PODNUTS. Instant House Call is the best remote support on earth. We can prove it. Try it free now and see for yourself.
Welcome to PODNUTS Daily, episode number 399, a show for computer repair techs by computer repair techs. I am your host, Jeff Hallisch. I'm joined by Marvin B. from mbsystems.net. How are you doing again, Marvin?
I am doing Facebook fantastic.
That is going to be your call sign from now on. Facebook fantastic.
Yep.
Okay. Well, appreciate you coming out on the show. And I know we talked a little bit before the show, maybe sharing some work stories, some things that you're doing in your shop. I'm sure everybody by now knows you. You've been on PODNUTS Daily and a couple times and PODNUTS a couple times. So always got something to share. But so what types of things you've been working on in your shop lately?
Well, probably the biggest projects I've got going are I've got a couple of ISP changes for a client that we're looking to switch over their voice data, and they also have phones rolled into the service. That's probably the biggest thing consuming my time, just going through all the different carriers and just, you know, all the salespeople, you know, lining up, because it's a pretty decent-sized client. So, of course, they're all thinking, you know, thousands of dollars monthly.
Right.
And that commission each month. But probably the biggest thing I should bring up first is I've had a client that they're not really a regular client. They probably call me once or twice a year.
Okay.
I've only had them for the last couple of years. But they're that client where they're not really big enough for me to push a lot of my services on. And to try to get them on some sort of, you know, retainer or some sort of service agreement. And the owner of the business is just smart enough to get himself in trouble.
Oh, gosh.
And about a month ago, they contacted me because they had CryptoWall.
Oh, no.
Yeah. So that I didn't think was really a big deal. I knew that we had set up their backup. Although, if they were on, you know, my monthly regular service, I'd be checking the backup. I'd be monitoring emails. Right. But we obviously didn't do that. And I hadn't heard from them since about January.
Oh.
So I log in, see how bad the damage is. Yes, they're infected. I find the infected computer. We get it off.
What is CryptoWall? I mean, obviously a lot of people know what the what was it called before?
Crypto locker.
What's the difference with CryptoWall now? What's it, same thing?
Not much difference. Okay. It's pretty much one of the newest variants. It's the same type of deal, ransomware. Pops up saying, "Where are my files? They're encrypted."
Okay,
and
gotcha.
You've got X number of hours to pay the ransom to get them back.
Now, what was the total cost on that? What did they want?
For this client at this time, it was $500.
Oh gosh!
And now I've had clients infected originally with the CryptoLocker and with the CryptoWall.
Okay.
But we've had very good backups, so all we did was clean up the virus, restore the backups, and they were fine.
Okay.
This particular client, we come to find out that they didn't have a recent backup.
Oh.
And one of the reasons that they did not catch the ransomware in time was because they're running their own antivirus maintenance. So they wouldn't let me put on a centralized program where, you know, there would have been alerts,
right,
or anything like that. They are doing it themselves. And obviously, they must not have even been updating, because most of the programs will catch you know, crypto locker, crypto wall, right, to some degree. It may not, identify it properly, but it will catch it. It'll say something's on this system. And apparently for an entire morning, they didn't detect anything until they started to try to open files that couldn't be opened anymore. So once they told me that, I kind of suspected that's what it was.
And okay.
As soon as we got in, I confirmed it. So we've that actually started last Tuesday.
Now what were they using for antivirus?
They were using, well,
different things.
Yeah, different things.
Okay.
A couple of them had AVG.
Okay.
A couple of them had the Microsoft Security Essentials.
Okay.
And then they had an outdated version of Symantec endpoint protection on the server that probably hadn't been updated. I think it was 2 years.
Oh, my gosh. So sitting there basically doing nothing.
Doing nothing, yeah.
So now, were the ones on the workstations, were they being updated, do you know, or were they not being updated?
Well, two of them were, because those were stations that I had actually replaced over the last 2 years.
Okay.
And so when we put in stations, we put in software, and that software, for the most part, was up to date. The infected computers were, well, the owner supposedly was clean, and then his main office manager slash secretary, hers was infected. And hers is a machine I've never looked at, never touched.
Okay.
So I really had no idea what she was running. But he did download Malwarebytes and downloaded a new copy of ABG, and that's how they cleaned up the systems. The problem is they wanted to do it all themselves.
Right.
And so they spent another half a day scanning all the computers manually to make sure they were clean. So it wasn't until Wednesday that we started to address how do we get back the files. So then he decided, well, it's just going to be just as simple for him to pay the $500. So he spent a day trying to get in touch with somebody to help him convert cash to bitcoins.
Oh, that's right. Because that's all they're allowing now, yeah.
Yes, and he couldn't do it online. He had to go to the bank and do – I mean, it was a whole – I don't think I've ever seen anybody go through as much as this guy went through. I mean, he literally had to go to the bank and get cash and go somewhere, and I kept saying, what are you doing? And he's like, I got it.
Wow.
And so he copied the files off the server to a USB drive, got the Bitcoin code, got the files back, and that wasn't until Friday. So he didn't have good working files until Friday.
Ugh.
And so this morning we actually started addressing the backup to get them a good copy.
Sure.
And turns out that they're using – I mean, the software that they're using is good. They're using Symantec Backup Exec.
Okay.
The problem is it was installed in 2010. Hadn't been maintained. They're running it on a small business server 2003. And instead of letting me maintain that server, we basically were trying to get him to the end of this year so he could purchase a new server. Okay. And on the new server, I was going to get him updated backup software, backup equipment, centralized antivirus. And so he was just trying to make it to the end of the year.
Okay.
And didn't make it.
Yeah. You know, sometimes, because when's end of life for 2003 server?
It's April of 2015 or something.
Okay. Yeah. That sounds about right. So yeah. Now he's having to deal with it because he's seen the pain and suffering of, you know, not paying somebody else to maintain his system.
Yeah. But what upsets me, it upsets me and doesn't upset me. You know, it's a client. I try not to get emotionally involved.
Right.
But it's one of these things where you were trying to save, you know, a couple $100 a month, you know, instead of just letting us take care of this a year ago.
Right.
You know, to get, you know, updated virus programs, get it so that it's monitored, make sure your backup's running. And instead, he spends a week, you know, basically a week trying to do all this himself. So, you know, it's a law office. It's him, another attorney.
Okay.
And three staff. So it's five people. But you've basically got five people that are half functioning for a week. And as an attorney, I know he's billing $300-$400 an hour.
Sure.
And he can make up that couple $100 a month like that.
Well, you know, and I, from his standpoint, I'm going to tell you, because my mom works for a law office, and she does the billing. And I'm going to tell you right now, the attorneys don't care because they don't have to do the billing. They're going to just, even though everybody was backed up for a week, he doesn't care because he doesn't have to do it. He's just going to go, hey, this needs to be done now. I don't care if you got to work overtime. What do you got? Work weekends? What, it doesn't matter. You're going to get it done.
Yeah.
And that's where it's frustrating when you go, why would you cause people in your company pain and suffering when you could have just paid a monthly fee? And especially for a lawyer. I mean, come on. We know they're making money. So.
Well, and these are the customers that, you know, I don't turn them away, but I certainly don't seek them out.
Sure. Right.
That, you know, he's more worried about saving the money. And in the heat of a crisis, he's the one trying to battle through it. You know, where he's staying late after hours to manually do a backup to a USB drive. He's running back and forth to the bank. He's, you know, he himself is going from station to station to clean up computers. And I'm thinking, why don't you work? Let somebody else do this for you. Take care of it so you don't have to be going through this.
Exactly.
And, you know, I don't know how we can really, if this doesn't make him turn around, I don't know what is. And
right,
you know, I mean, at least I really thought that when he made that first call that he was really going to be upset and screaming, and you know, because, you know, clients are known to do that. I don't want you to maintain it. I don't want you to, you know, monitor it, but if it fails, I want you to be responsible for it.
Right.
And I was really expecting for him to say to us, you know, why isn't my backup running? And you set it up, you know, a year ago. And, you know, he actually was understandable in the fact that he knows we didn't, you know, he knows I haven't looked at it.
Right.
So he's at least not yelled and said, you know, I'm sorry, you know, I'm really pissed off that this didn't work. He kind of acknowledged that, yeah, I didn't do what I was supposed to do.
Right. So, exactly.
But I just think that, you know, you can't force a client to do what's right. You can just keep pushing them and, you know, nudging them. And
well, you offer them, you know, things that will help them. And if they don't want to use those things, then, you know, it's one of those things where you kind of shrug your shoulders and go, okay, well, this is probably, you know, these are the scenarios that can happen.
Right.
And, you know, hopefully they don't. But if they do, this is, you know, these are the things you could have avoided by just, you know, following our advice, which you basically are calling us in here for.
Right.
You want our advice on how to maintain your systems, you know, but yep. So that's
funny.
Rough.
I mean, I've had other clients. I mean, just the fear of losing data, you know, puts them on a path of do whatever you got to do, protect my stuff.
You know, exactly. I'm so concerned about data, even though my data is not life or death, but it's a lot of stuff that I've created over the years that I really don't want to lose. You know, I've got an online backup. I've got an internal drive backup. I've got an external drive backup. I've got a clone drive. So if my main drive goes down, I can just swap the drive out and I'm back up and running within a few minutes. Because my life is busy. I, you know, I use my computer for a lot of things.
Yep.
So I want to have that stuff in place.
Yep. Oh, so I just figured I know techs out there are going to have similar stories, but, you know, we all go through it at some point in time. We just, and I just know that it was odd, because usually it's, you know, I'm in fireman mode. you know, usually when this happens, you know, I'm dropping everything. I'm running over there, taking care of stuff. And this is one where he owned it. He said he'll take care of it. And I just kind of hung up the phone and said, wow, I don't have to worry about it.
Right. Right.
I mean, if he was a person I didn't like, I mean, I've, you know, we all had clients that, you know, I wish they didn't call. I wish they didn't, you know. And, I mean, I have had clients that have called in the face of an emergency, and I just have to tell them, look, you didn't want my help before. If you want my help now, you're going to pay. And I'm not really worried about whether, you know, you say yes or no.
Right. Exactly.
But most of my clients, you know, yeah, we would draw. I would have dropped everything. I'd have been, I'll take care of it. I would take care of it. And this one, I part of me feels a little bad because I didn't push harder. But at the same time, you know, I was able to sleep over the weekend,
right,
and not worry about it. So,
well, what do they say? You know, you can lead a horse to water, but you can't make him drink. And that's right. Just you did what you could. And again, we provide the information. If the customer doesn't want to follow that information, that's on them. And that's the way I really look at it nowadays. I just go, it's on you. I said, I'll help you as best I can. But, you know, especially a business, you know, and that's why it's tough, because a lot of times I feel like I would almost want to require, you know, you have to do this or I'm not going to work with you. You have to set, you know, have this back up. You have to have it monitored. You have to, you know, in all these different things. But you can't always do that because there's different customers that want different things. And that's just the way it is.
Well, it's funny. I mean, I've always taken the stance that, you know, this is my network. Now, it's not.
Right, right.
But if I'm going to be responsible for maintaining it, I'm going to own it.
Right.
And, you know, probably 80% of my customers are fine with whatever you'd got to do. And, you know, I will take those steps to, you know, put on the monitoring, make sure the backup's working, make sure the antivirus is up to date. Probably so much to the point where there's times where, you know, when the renewal comes up, I don't even ask the client. I just do it.
Okay.
You know, and I've had clients where I've got the relationship to where I may throw it on there without telling them and without billing them, just so that I can be comfortable with, I've got it taken care of, so that when I do go to them and say, okay, this is what I've been doing for your network, now I need you to pay.
Okay.
to get current and stuff. But I think techs have to really take that step and, you know, in a sense, own the networks, the computers that they are maintaining. It's not our business. You know, the client's data is not our data, you know, but they're going to look to us when there's a problem.
Right. No, exactly.
And,
that's true.
You know, responsibility is part of the game if this is what we want to do.
Yep. And that's, yeah, there's definitely a fine line there. Now, what are you using for monitoring different offices and stuff like that? What type of software are you using?
Well, I've got a couple of different things that we're doing. I am using the GFI.
Okay.
The GFI Max. And I've got that mainly for the servers.
Okay.
For monitoring the, you know, event logs. I've set up event logs to be monitored. Obviously, it does the, you know, the pinging, make sure it stays up.
Okay.
The services. I've actually got it monitoring. Some of the clients have specialized software for their business, and so I will actually add events based on that software.
Okay.
So if a service for that particular software stops working, I'll know about it. And even though the server's up and running, I can go in and fix that software. But then I use a lot of the, you know, the centralized AVG.
Okay.
But I have all the alerts come to my office. So that if a station, you know, doesn't get updated properly, if it needs to be restarted, if the definitions, you know, don't get updated in time, you know, they're all set up with, you know, every 4 hours, you know, the system's going to make sure that, you know, it's up to date and all of that. If there is a detection, even if it's caught and quarantined, I still have an alert sent to me so that at least I know that something's been caught.
Right.
And that way, if a station starts to be hit on a regular basis, now I can go address the behavior of that station or that user.
Sure.
And find out why is it being attacked all the
right.
time. So I've got that. I've got
Facebook.
Yeah. Facebook, yeah. Yeah, the Facebook Messenger. That's a joy.
Oh, my gosh.
But I also use a couple of programs. There's one called Event Sentry.
Okay.
And that there's a free version and a paid version. The paid version starts at $75 per server. But a lot of people can use the free version. And it's very similar to GFI, where it'll monitor the system and you can set it up to send you email alerts, you know, if the space gets low, if certain events happen, stuff like that. I also use, for a couple of customers, we use the Spiceworks.
Okay, yep.
And we just let that monitor. I use it on the smaller networks. And that'll monitor, you know, all the machines, printers, all the stuff on the network. John, I use so many other things.
Well, how do you figure out which you're going to use for what types of clients? I mean, do you have a scenario where you go, it's a certain size client, so we got to use this system, or is it, you know, smaller clients, so we're going to use this system, or paid versus free, you know, or a combination of.
Yeah, it's pretty much based on what I know the customer will be comfortable with.
Okay.
In terms of paying. Those that, you know, are going to be tight with the budget, I'll start maybe with some of the free versions so that at least I have it, and then I can just charge them a really low nominal fee, and it's usually just the amount of time that I need to, you know, log in each month, check everything, do the updates, restart the server. And if I get an email alert and I have to act on that, that's a extra billable charge.
Okay.
So they feel like, you know, it may be $95 a month to monitor stuff, but, you know, I'm only going to charge them extra if I actually have to go in and do stuff, whether it's remote or on site. For the larger customers or the customers that aren't going to worry about it and I can charge X number, you know, dollars per machine, then we'll go into the paid, the GFI products, and all of that stuff. But it varies from customer to customer. It's really a case-by-case basis.
Okay.
I mean, a lot of the, you know, you know, we always talk about free versus paid, and you get what you pay for in the free. But a lot of the free stuff can really save you in the absence of nothing. So
right. Well, it's kind of a cover your own rear end type deal.
Right.
You know, you're protecting yourself so that you can better protect your client, you know, so that they do have a problem. At least, like, it's actually smart business if you think about it, because if you're getting alerted and you see that there's a problem and you go in and fix that problem, that those are billable hours, like you said.
Yeah.
And that makes perfect sense. So you're kind of setting yourself up for a way to go back into the customer and take care of problems. You're protecting them, but you're also getting paid for it.
Right.
So it's a win-win situation.
Yeah. The event Sentry free version is great for that. For people who, you know, they may not want to pay for, I mean, it's not like the GFI is costly either.
Right.
It's really not a lot of money. But when you're talking, you know, 50, 60, 100, you know, computers, it gets pretty costly.
Sure.
Actually, I have one client that we're doing the LogMeIn Central.
Okay.
Where they're on the free version of the LogMeIn client, but they're paying the $300 a year for that central console. And it doesn't give all the same benefits of monitoring, but at least I can log into it and I can see the computers that need updates, antivirus needs attention, that sort of stuff.
Gotcha.
So,
okay.
You know, basically it comes out, I don't know, whatever, $25 a month to do that. But every time I touch a station, that's billable.
Gotcha. That makes perfect sense. Now, did you, as far as like GFI, how did you learn how to set that up? Or, I mean, was it fairly simple as far as getting it set up for the clients?
It, I'm still learning, because to set up the basic stuff, it's pretty simple.
Okay.
You just, you know, you go into the dashboard, you download the agent, you can go through and set up and just accept a lot of the defaults. But if you really wanted to get granular with it, there's a lot of stuff you can do in terms of setting up specific events, you know, non-standard stuff, you know. So if you've got a SQL server, or one of the things that I've done is I've got a client that replicates data between five offices. And okay. so they're using the Microsoft DFS built-in software. So I've actually had to go in and pick out services just for DFS that can be monitored, so that if a replication stops between one of the servers in another office, I'll know about it. And then I've got it set up to where, you know, I've got an alert for the error, and in some cases it'll fix itself. So I have an alert for the event that tells me it's fixed.
Okay.
So I know that if I don't get that second alert within, you know, 5 minutes, I've got to go look at it.
Right. Now, what was the DFS? What does that stand for?
That's the Distributed File System Replication for Microsoft.
Okay. Okay.
It's a built-in service for the Microsoft servers that you can set up data folders and replicate those between offices. So, you know, if I've got an office here in, you know, where I am, and a server where you are, the people in your office would have a local data drive that would look exactly like the one here.
Okay.
And if a file changes here, it instantly gets replicated up there.
Oh, okay.
And that way people are always working on local files. But if your server goes down, the people down here can still work. When your server comes back up, the data replicates and everybody's back up to speed.
Very nice. Okay.
And that happens pretty much in real time. I mean, we're talking, less than a second for, you know, most of the files. So if I change a Word document here, literally within a second, you'll see any change that I've made in that Word document.
Wow, that's really cool. I can see the benefits of that. Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, it just simply cuts down on bandwidth, you know, so you're not doing a VPN tunnel across, you know, some internet connection or some MPLS or anything like that. Actually, you've got multiple backup options at that point, because each office can have a backup. So here in Florida, that makes a huge difference, because I've got, you know, an office on the East Coast, an office on the West Coast. Hurricane takes out the East Coast office. I've got all the data on the West Coast, and I've got a backup on the West Coast. I just bring the backup over to the East Coast, restore, and let it sync up again, and then they're back in business.
Very nice. Okay. Wow. That is a service I was not aware of.
Yeah, it took me a while to get up to that. But actually, the software vendor was the one that introduced us to it. And, you know, Microsoft doesn't really give a lot of support for that. I haven't quite figured out why. I mean, it's a pretty hefty service. And when it does not work, it can be a nightmare.
Okay.
But when it does work, it's awesome. Clients, you know, they don't understand how it works. They just know that when it doesn't, and they've got to get a file from one office to the other, it's a nuisance.
Right. Wow. Well, that's pretty cool. You know what? Let me, we're going to talk about one of our sponsors here real quick. This show is, we've got a, ad here from D7, from Nick Shaw. And, I just want to tell you guys, D7 is the ultimate PC technician's repair tool designed to automate your daily workload and dramatically increase your efficiency and ultimately your bottom line. D7 2 provides automation for system information and gathering, custom reporting, virus and malware removal, Windows repair and comprehensive maintenance, basic tweaking and app installations, data backup, keeping all of your favorite tools updated, keeping your configuration and definition synced in the cloud, integration with your PSA, CRM, or ticket tracking software. And D7.2 version 3 has some new things that are really cool. We've got new and simple and descriptive interface for viewing and reacting to system alerts and also for running internal functions. We got build custom HTML reports with your pre-configured template, customized apps or system alerts any way that you want, and they're all automatically logged as you work within D7.2. You can reorder all D7.2 functions, mixing and matching them with custom apps and your predefined auto mode routines. And Nick is always adding new features. He never stops. I'll tell you what, D7.2, automate, relax, get paid. Why don't you guys head on over to foolishit.com and use the offer code PODNUTS20. And a great piece of software there. It will help save time in your business. And as a matter of fact, right now I am running it on a system sitting next to me while I'm doing this podcast. And it's just running and doing its thing. So that's one of the things I like. I can multitask. So definitely check that out over at foolishit.com. And again, use the offer code PODNUTS20. All right.
So, just to add to that, I've got D7 running on a machine also.
Oh, that's awesome.
I've actually got it doing a stress test on a machine.
Okay. I've had a couple of things in the shop where I've actually had to use D7.2, and the stress testing tool is awesome for trying to figure out problems. I had a computer that was crashing. Couldn't figure it out. I don't know what they were doing, but I ran a stress test on it for like 4 hours and just, I nailed it with everything and it ran fine.
Yeah.
So it's like, you're doing something because your hardware is fine. It's running just perfectly fine. So, it's great software. So we're talking about, supporting the businesses and stuff like that. Are you working on some other things too right now in your business?
Well, luckily I've slowed down a little bit.
To some, that's a good thing. To some, then not so much.
Yeah, that's true. When I say slow down, it basically means that I may not have to leave the office for a day or two.
Okay.
But I'm still doing everything, remote. So.
Gotcha. Okay.
I've got, the big projects, and I really shouldn't call them projects, but I guess they're ongoing. It's just your basic server upgrades we're doing right now. We still got some clients on 2003 servers,
right?
That we're getting switched over to 2012. That's a big deal. I've got a customer that just opened up another office, and they are doing a remote connection through the small business server console, the remote web workplace. And probably that was a little bit of frustration for me, because basically the client wanted to set everything up themselves. So even though they told me they were opening an office, they didn't tell me when they were opening the office. Except that I got a call and said, okay, we're here. We're going to the store to get some computers. What should we get?
Oh, wow.
And so that was fun. They just went. They got the Windows 7 professional stations there. They've got an internet connection that they got set up. At least they got a static IP, so we can do stuff later if we need to. Okay. But the interesting problem we ran into is, of course, rather than having me send somebody to make sure the computers were set up properly, they got their internet connection, they had all the updates. They waited until after they set everything up and couldn't connect back to the main office that they called in a panic, because they had a bunch of people at the office trying to work and they couldn't figure out how to get connected.
See, now at this point I would be like, hey, that's great. I'm out of town right now and I'll be back in about a week. So maybe you guys can just hold on.
Yeah.
Oh, gosh.
That's the thing with business customers. They really kind of don't understand that.
Right. It's, you know, oh, you're not doing anything. You can drop what – I'm your only client, right?
Yeah. Oh, yeah. Yeah. But then once they realize, oh, you're not going to help us, well, can you send somebody?
Right.
But it was fun. I mean, that actually turned out not to be so bad, but it was just that Monday morning panic.
Sure.
You know, as if to say, look, I've got other calls coming in too. But these people, you know, either they paid to be priority customers.
Right.
Or, you know, they pre-planned the call with me and let me know things, you know, ahead of time.
Right.
But that was fun. If anybody has a remote web workplace, I can tell you is probably one of the great tools that Microsoft put out that it's going to be frustrating when they get rid of it.
Oh, no.
It has really been able to allow clients to work from home without having to purchase, you know, some sort of, you know, log me in or go to my PC or something like that. They just log into the remote web workplace on their server, RDP over to their desktop, and they're good to go.
Okay.
No extra cost. I mean, you just, you know, make sure you have enough bandwidth. But that's been a great thing, but I don't know what they're going to do moving forward. I think it's still in 2012 essentials, but I don't think it's going to be in any of their products going forward.
Okay. Now, are a lot of people using the 2012 essential server, or are a lot of them using the full-fledged server?
I've only got one client that's on the essentials.
Okay.
Most of my clients are on the standard, and that's because they've got other options for the remote stuff. We've either got a terminal server or a Citrix server, and that's what they're using for the remote stuff.
Okay.
But I have heard a lot of techs have been staying away from the essentials. And I don't really know all the reasons, except that you know, they're afraid of that 25 user limit. At some point, if the business grows above that, but I don't think that that's really something to worry about. I'm not quite sure.
25 people is a lot. Is still a lot of people for. I mean, most of your small businesses are running, you know, 5, maybe 10 people at the most. You're not really. Yeah. Once you start getting to the 25 level, you're talking about a pretty good sized business at that point.
Yeah. And, you know, Essentials is so nicely integrated for those types of customers. You know, 5-10 users, they're probably going to be on a hosted exchange anyway,
right,
or Office 365. And the Essential server works with that great.
Okay.
I mean, it's almost built for that. I'll probably be putting a few more clients on that. But my larger clients, it's all standard.
Okay.
Server for the 2012 stuff.
So apparently you haven't run into any problems with the 2012 Essential server then.
Well, I only have the one, so.
Okay.
Don't jinx me.
Yeah, still, I think you would know that if there were some apparent problems that were going to plague you, you know, on a regular basis. But if they're not, then obviously it does work in some use case scenarios.
Yeah, I mean, this client that I put it in is 13 stations, and I mean, outside of a little, you know, hiccup here and there that had nothing to do with their server, you know, they had a scanning issue with a copier, and I mean, but their server has been, you know, running just fine. Set it up, no connection issues, no configuration issues. It's been a horse.
Okay. Very good. Now, what was the scanning issues on that?
Their scanner needed to be updated with the firmware to work with 2012.
Now, how do most people, you know, I've always had an issue with scanning. This brings up a good, because I don't have a solid answer, but even from a residential standpoint, and I usually buy pretty, you know, not the super high-end printers, but, you know, decent middle of the road, you know, work printers for the home. How are most people scanning at these? Like, if you go to scan something on, let's say, some of these printers and you want to send it to a certain workstation. Are most of these higher end printers easy? Is it easy enough to do that?
Well, first, most of my clients, once they get above 10, 15 users, we're usually getting them to lease a copier.
Okay.
Toshiba, Konica, you know, whatever. And within those copiers, that functionality is there where you can set up users, you know, scan to email, scan to folder.
Okay.
And, you know, you can set it up to as many stations as you need. And I've always pushed them to that for that. Now, the smaller clients, I don't really push the scan to desktop options on those. I just haven't really found them. You know, they take so much configuration because if, you know, it's based on the machine. So if you have to replace a machine or configure a new user, then you've got to reconfigure. And most of the multifunction units, you know, they don't really work that well across the network. They work great if it's connected USB.
Okay.
But I've found the network features lacking.
Okay.
I think Xerox did a really good job. They had I think it was the 3120 series. That was a very good multifunction. And they did a scan to desktop that was great. You just simply installed software locally, and it would just basically show up in your task tray down in the bottom right. And once you got that configured, it would show up on the copier. So you'd go up and hit scan to desktop, and then pick the name for there. So that worked, the Xerox. But I don't know if they make that model or that series anymore.
Because, and maybe this is just my lack of knowledge, the only way I've been able to get it to work as far as scanning to an individual computer, because I have to do it in my house. I have 10 machines running at any given time for various reasons. Don't ask. Anyways, I have a lot of kids. But one of the things that I do is I use the scanning software, or not scanning software, but I just go to scan on my computer, but I have to go to the scanner, put whatever document in there. I have to go back to the computer, hit scan, and it will scan to that computer. But I can never get anything to work where I can go to the printer itself, run a scan, and push it to a folder on a certain machine. I've just never been able to get that to work. But
that's one reason why that Xerox sticks in my mind, because we searched for that.
Okay.
And literally, you know, people could just walk up. I mean, you know, my wife does it all the time where she'll scan something, select my name, and it comes to me. I'm working away and the thing pops up in my face. So
nice.
And we use that copier for probably 7 or 8 clients for years.
Great.
It's just not a very robust workstation type device.
Gotcha.
It's really meant for, you know, 2-3 people. It's not a heavy duty printer.
Okay. So I guess as a technician, I feel a little bit better because I figured there was something that I was doing wrong, but apparently not.
No, you know, you just gotta jump up in class.
Go from the, you know, $500 printer to about, you know, a couple $1,000 printer.
Yeah. There's a Lexmark that is probably about as big as the HP workstation printers. That one of my clients has. I don't know the cost of it, but they've got 2 of them.
Okay.
And that's what they use. And, you know, they set up the desktop feature and they just walk up and scan. And, you know, you do have to install software to each station.
Okay.
But I'll have to find that model for you and send it over. But I think that they lease that to the copy company, because they've got 3 copiers. And then they've got these 2 Lexmark machines that they use for part of their office.
And you don't have to do any port forwarding or anything like that on the network? Okay.
Well, all right. What's funny is, I mean, I have gone in and played around with them, but for the most part, the copier company takes care of it.
Okay. Well, that's good. So that's, again, it's something off your plate that somebody else can take care of, and you just got to, you know, be there to kind of be the support in the middle.
Yeah, all I do is make sure that they, you know, we configure a static IP address in a certain range, and then that's it. And then they come in and configure all the address book stuff. And
okay,
I mean, I'll watch them so that way, you know, if I need to go do something, if an employee comes or goes, you know, and I happen to be there, I can just go in and change that address and get that set up and go from there. But you know, if they have any major issue, you know, I'm like, call your company. That's why right. You pay the lease.
Right. That's a good point. Yeah, I have to play around with that. I have a Epson Workforce Pro, and I can probably it may do it. I've just never been able to get it to work. So it's it'll either do it or won't. Sounds like. Well, that's good. It's learned something new.
Yeah, I think a lot of them, it's going to be based on the software.
Okay. And you know, when they're pushing out software that's like, you know, 300 megs big and you know, takes about 4 hours to install, it becomes kind of a pain.
Yep, actually ran into that last week. I had somebody, you know, we rebuilt the computer for them and delivered it back, and they're like, "Oh, well, I need this." And for the first time in a long time, I ran into a client with a DSL connection.
Oh, wow.
And the software, I think it was 260 megs. And I said, I'm going to start this download. You call me in the morning.
Because what you have is not much better than dial-up.
He's like, is it going to take that long? And I'm like, yeah. And it was like 10 minutes to 5. And I'm like, I don't think we want to be waiting for this.
Yeah. Oh, wow. Yeah, I actually did that on a machine, and I went home and I remoted in later and, you know, finished it up. But I was like, wow. Even the install on printers takes forever. I don't care what operating system you're on. It's ridiculous. Yep. I don't know what they're putting in there that makes it take so long, but whatever.
I don't know. Oh, but I will throw this tip out for everybody. This particular person, we installed a Windows 8 computer for them. And the printer that he had, I think it was a Brother, and it was probably 10 years old.
Oh, gosh.
And the Windows 8 didn't recognize it. So I said, you probably should go get a new one. And so he did, came back, downloaded that 260 meg file, got it installed. Everything was great, worked fine, was actually able to scan wirelessly. Okay. To the desktop, worked great. And then about a week later, called me back because he did the upgrade to 8.1.
Oh, no.
And he said, I kept getting annoyed with that message, so I did it. And he goes, it took forever. I said, because you have DSL.
Right.
And when he did the update to 8.1, printer stopped working. Brand new printer.
Well,
and took us a day to kind of go through and figure it out. I finally went there, and I'm like, we probably need to go to the site and see if there's updated software for right. This, which it was. Had to download another 200 and something meg file. But just the difference between 8.0 and 8.1, you know.
Well, when 8.1 installs, I didn't realize this, but when I was looking at my logs, basically it – 8.1, it installs, it acts like a brand new reinstall.
Yeah.
So it restarts the clock on how long you've had Windows installed on that particular drive. Mm-hmm. So it does a lot. Now, what I did find out was interesting, because you guys may be buying SSD. But anyways, that's another story. Watch Podnos from a couple weeks ago. Anyways, so I bought an SSD, and when I've done 8.1 upgrades on many machines over the past year. And it literally seems to take from downloading and installing. And I have a very fast connection here. But what I think is it's doing is it's downloading and installing at the same time. It takes like 3 hours.
Yeah.
Okay. Now, I was talking to Dor the other day.
Because here's what I figured out. It downloads what it thinks it needs, tries to configure stuff, and then goes back and grabs more downloads.
Okay. That makes perfect sense. Now, I will tell you, on an SSD on my machine, it took less than 10 minutes. Mm-hmm. I was blown away because right after I did mine, and I actually, because I screwed up the naming in it, never mind. Anyways, I redid it twice just because I'm a glutton for punishment. And both times it was less than 10 minutes to do that upgrade. I was amazed. But I had a machine right after that, a laptop, and it was 3 hours.
Yeah, it's
insane.
Who can describe why?
So yeah, in what I you know, now that I've done the install this time, everything just seems to work a little bit better. When I originally did the first 8.1 install, there were a few issues that weren't terribly bad that bothered me enough to do a reinstall on my system, but you could tell they were there. They would rear their ugly faces every once in a while. But for the most part, now that I've redone it and done a clean install, because I couldn't get a whole install of 8.1, I had to go back to the downloaded version that I'd originally upgraded from Windows 7 to 8, and I did a clean install with 8, but I couldn't get the 8.1, wouldn't work with the product key, and that's a whole nother story. Anyways, there are workarounds, but I didn't feel like dealing with them. I tried a couple things. I said, you know what? It's just faster for me to update this and do what I need to do. So that's what I ended up doing.
Yeah, I've heard stories of people having to, you know, you install 8, but you gotta, you know, Microsoft tells you gotta go to 8.1, and you know you can't do this because you don't have 8.1, but you gotta get 8.1 in order to. It's a vicious circle.
It is.
Which is why I think they went from Windows 8 to 8.1 to 10.
Yeah. Now I will tell you, I did find a way to do the install without actually doing a product key, and I have to share my notes on that at some point. But yeah, I was able to do it no problem. I got it to recognize, and once I put in my product key, I know what I did. It was an EI config file, and what I did was I added it to my USB stick after I had taken an ISO and installed it on there.
Right.
And whatever version for that laptop or desktop that you're using, whether it be home or whatever or pro, I think there's really only, it's not basic, but there's a name for it. A core or professional.
Core or professional, yep, yeah.
Those are the two. So once you put that in there, and whether it's retail, OEM, you just have to match it up to the sticker on the bottom of the machine. It will let you install it without a product key. And then you can go from there, and you put in your real product key after you're done, and it's verified every time for me. I've never had a problem, and I've done it several times. So some people have said that they've had problems. It's what I found that seemed to work consistently for me. So
I haven't done enough 8.1s yet. I'll probably start doing. I've got a client that I think we're going to replace 6 stations and doing with 8.1, but I'm going to download 10 this weekend.
I have it, but with all the problems I've been having here, I just have not. I have a drive that I was going to take, a little 160 gig drive, and I can pop it in the top of my machine and make my machine to boot from that toaster on the top of my machine, my computer. Mm-hmm. So anytime I have a drive plugged in, it'll search that. If there's an operating system on it, it'll load that up. So that's what I'm going to do to play around with it eventually.
Yeah.
When I have time.
Yeah. Yeah. We all got that kind of time.
Exactly. Well, is there anything else? Any other stories you've been working on? Anything else that's,
I think those two horror stories are enough.
I'll tell you what, let's go and I got a couple emails we're going to read, and we'll go ahead and go through that, and then kind of move on from there. So a couple of people had some questions for me. I figured I would read their emails on the show anyways, just so that I can answer the question if more people had this same type of question. And this one is, let me click this out of the way. This is from Brian F. He says, "Hey, Jeff, I've been listening to Podnuts and Podnuts Daily Podcast for a while now. Just want to say you're doing a great job and are providing a really good resource of information and wonderful tech community we have through the many networks that all seem to intertwine. I just wanted to ask you, I know I heard it in a few podcasts, but I can't remember which ones, and had no luck in going back and listening to a handful that you mentioned, an author who has written some very good business books. Would you be able to tell me who that was? And if you have any suggestions for a must read, I work a full-time job, much like you, I think, and have my business kind of in the background, but want to stay sharp and make sure that if and when the time comes to make a big leap stab at this, I have as much knowledge as I can. Many thanks and keep up the great work. Looking forward to hearing from you. Now, unfortunately, by the time I got back to Brian, and thanks for the email, Brian, appreciate it. By the time I got back to him, he had found the information, but it was Mike Michalowicz, and it was The Pumpkin Plan. And I can't remember the name of his other book right now. But anyway, he's got two books out there that I've read. The Pumpkin Plan was the first one. And very, very good on the whole business concept and basically how to it's kind of tells you how to keep the best clients that you have and kind of put the other ones to the side. And that may or may not be useful for your business, but I just found a lot of the things. These books are really about thought process, not so much about doing things, but how you think about. You know, we all get stuck in ruts sometimes of doing the same thing over and over again and going, why isn't this working? You know, why am I not growing? Why am I not moving along? And so this book kind of gives you that realization of, hey, I can think a little bit differently, and that hopefully will help my business and, you know, kind of help propel it forward. So anyways, yeah, Mike Michalowicz, and you can check it out over at The Pumpkin Plan. I think if you just type in pumpkin plan, it'll come right up and you'll have all his resources. And he's got a bunch of great free resources too on his website. All right.
I will add to tell people, read business books as much as you can. Especially if you're, you know, trying to run your own business shop, you're going to manage techs. I was looking at my bookshelf over here. I probably got 100 books that I've gotten over the years, and a lot of them I go back to because you just have to keep reminding yourself of business strategies. And, you know, it doesn't have to be tech related either.
Right.
I mean, books from, you know, Michael Gerber and the E-Myth.
Somebody just recommended that to me the other, it was Corey Fruitman from Instant House Call recommended that to me.
Yeah.
It's a must read.
Yeah, they are. And it's, there's three of them, I think, that I have. And yes, that is an absolute must. Because it you have to get in the business mindset, and not the tech mindset,
right?
And that's so I've got those, and then I probably buy every book I can find on time management,
the holy grail of business running.
it is, yeah. I mean, you know, the one, you know, Never Check Email in the Morning by I can't remember her name, Julie something. But just books like that just, you know, help you manage your time. I mean, that's probably the biggest thing as techs that hinders us, is there's only so much time.
Yes. Yep.
You know, and if you've got to be on site at a client, your time is even more limited.
Exactly.
than if you're in your office trying to manage time. But what I've also found is in your office, even though you think you're in control and managing, you can just get so lost and, you know, lose your way because there's so many more distractions.
Yeah.
You know, at least at a client, you're there, you're working, you've got one job to do. But in the office, if, you know, the phones, the emails, the multiple computers, you know, there's just so much. So I would definitely recommend to step out of the comfort zone and try not to always read techie stuff.
Right.
But business stuff.
I agree. You know, and a lot of this business too is on handling people. You know, you can go back to some of the old classics, you know, How to Win Friends and Influence People, which I read probably 20 plus years ago. These are great, great books for, you know, just learning how to deal with people and just understanding how people are going to be, and not, you know, again, we've talked about it before, not taking things so personally. It's not a personal attack on you. If people are having a bad day because their whole office blew up, then, you know, they're having a bad day because their office blew up. They're not having a bad day because you made them mad in some form or fashion. So, yeah, these are things that I definitely will help you. And I've said this before, and I'll say it again. Most of us are great techs, and most of us suck at business. I'll just be point blank and honest, and I throw myself in there. I am always learning how to better myself in my business because I don't do things the way that I should do them as a business owner, and I know it. And these are things that can always be improved on, you know. And it's not to say that, hey, we're all going to learn at some, you know, at some point. It's all up to you on how long you want to take to learn something. But I'm always in the mindset of I want to move my business forward. I want to make it better. I want to get the most that I can out of it. I want to help people that need help with their computers, and that's what I'm here for. And so if I'm scatterbrained and I'm all over the place, I cannot effectively help the people that I want to help because I'm scatterbrained and all over the place, you know? Yeah. So, but yeah, definitely. I agree with that. Definitely read business books. Good things there. All right. So we got one more email, and this was, let me go down the list. This was from Paco LeBron, and he was on Podnest Daily a few episodes ago. It says, hey, Jeff, quick question. I heard on a show there's a dental tool that you use to remove laptop keyboards, but couldn't catch the name. Can you let me know what the tool is called? Thanks, Paco. Thanks again for the email, Paco. And I sent him an email back, and basically there was two sets of tools that I use for doing everything on a laptop outside of the screwdrivers. Prying tools, I should say. And both of them you can find over at ifixit.com, and they're not a sponsor, but I do, you know, buy certain things from there. You can also find them on eBay and stuff like that. But if you want to take a look at them, there is a tool set, the metal spudger set, over at ifixit.com. You can just type that in and it'll take you right there. And it's basically four tools of metal that are various sizes and shapes. Some are pointier, some are flat. They're very good tools for, you know, getting in something and prying it. But the one that I use for the keyboards, which I didn't realize is it's actually made for phones and lifting screens off, is the, and you can find it over at iFixit or eBay, iSesimo. And it's the iSesimo opening tool. And it's basically a flat, flexible tool. And I don't know if you guys have ever seen those little plastic tabs on the keyboards on a laptop, but man, sometimes they are so hard to move. You got to really push on something with them. Then you got to lift up with something else. This tool I was actually able to fit in there, click it back, and lift it at the same time. You do that like three times and the keyboard's off. I was amazed. And again, it's used most of the time for mobile phones,
right,
or tablets. But I found a different use for it because I don't fix mobile phones or tablets. So it works great for keyboards.
Yep.
And when you're taking a laptop apart, you're always going to have to take the keyboard off, guaranteed. As far as I know, anyways. Any types of tools that you use, Marvin, or as far as hardware tools for taking stuff apart, anything special?
No, well, I just go out and try to find all the precision tools I can.
Okay.
I mean, the smallest sets of screwdrivers that I can find. I keep every little thing I can find with the multiple tips.
Okay. Yep.
But the micro ones, I tell you, the really good tools I found are the ones that, that you can get with the little hex, not just your standard screwdriver bits, but the smaller hex screwdrivers you can get with all the specialized, those come in handy as well.
Oh, yes.
Sometimes I find them on, you know, in the little clearance section at either Home Depot or Lowe's, and you get the whole pack for, you know, $5.
Okay. That's a good tip. Yeah, very good. Very good. Yeah, I've used some of those smaller tools I've actually used for pulling stripped screws out of laptops. Mm-hmm. That somebody had stripped so badly, and I was able to find a tool that in the grooves that were left in there, which were barely none, I was able to find one that fit exactly in there.
Right.
I was able to put some pressure on it and pry it right up. And yeah, definitely worked no problem. So it's good to have all those extra tools, you know. The more the merrier.
Yep.
Well, I appreciate, you know, you coming out on the show and sharing with us again. I appreciate the stories. A lot of good stories, as usual.
We're techs. We'll always have stories.
Exactly. If people wanted to find you, what's the best way to do that?
The website, mbsystems.net. If you're on here in the chats, I'm MB Systems Inc. And those are the two best places.
Okay. Sounds good. Again, thanks for coming out. And you guys can find me over on the Google Plus at Jeffrey Halish or Twitter at TechNutPC. And if you have any questions or would like to be a guest on the show, yes, I said if you would like to be a guest on the show, please email me at podnutsdaily@podnuts.com. Always looking for guests, guys. If you've been on here before, please email me if you've got some time to do a show. And if you've never been on a show, but you're interested in coming on a show, please contact me. Again, it's podnutsdaily@podnuts.com. And we'll get you set up and we'll do a show. And it's just a couple guys talking or a couple a guy and a gal. I guess I'll always be a guy, but and just kind of sharing what we do in the shop, you know, and different stories that we come across. So different things that happen to us. And if you guys want to leave a voicemail, please call us at 1-888-697-0162. And we will definitely play that on the show. You guys can also help support the Podnuts Network. The next time you're shopping at Amazon, go to podnuts.com/Amazon. And I want to thank everyone for listening and subscribing to the show. We'll see you next time on Podnuts Daily. My name is Jeff Halish. I am the host of Podnuts, where Chris Carruthers and myself take live calls on the air to answer questions or to get answers from other computer repair techs every Sunday at 4 p.m. Eastern. You can check it out over at podnuts.com/live. Music provided by Steve Cherubino at stevecherubino.com.